Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Ella Jean Ehrlich.
I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
I'm Rosie.
This is Martina Navratilova.
This is Mark Forbes.
I'm Andy Murray.
You're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. My name is David Law, a commentator for BBC Radio 5 Live and BT Sport. We have a lot to talk to you about today. The news earlier today, in fact, that Andy Murray has had surgery on his right hip. We'll get to that in a minute. We're going to be hearing from Simon Briggs of The Telegraph, their tennis correspondent, joining us on the phone from Sydney, where he's been covering Andy Murray over the last week and all the issues that he's been facing. We'll be speaking to Nigel Sears, one of the top WTA coaches, who also happens to be Andy Murray's father-in-law. Spoke to him last week, so you'll hear from him. Somebody you won't be hearing from is Catherine Whittaker, I'm afraid, because she is not very well today. And because she's got the lurgy, frankly, I don't want to get too close to her. I don't want to catch that thing. So she's resting up. You'll be able to hear from her once the Australian Open draw has been made. She'll be in Australia from about Thursday. She's getting on a plane on Wednesday. I'm going to do the same. And then we'll reconvene after the official draw and have a good chat then. So before we get to Andy Murray, I'll just give you a bit of an update as to what's been going on in the tennis world. Nick Kyrgios has won the title, his first title on Australian soil in Brisbane. He did a pretty good job of it as well. He got a win over Grigor Dimitrov, then he ended up playing against Ryan Harrison in the final. Harrison, an American who's been around for ages, hasn't he now? And he did excellently to get to the final. His new coach is Michael Russell, and that seems to be working well, but Kyrgios way too much for him, brushed him aside in straight sets. And so, you know, Kyrgios goes into the Australian Open with a bit of confidence. So whether that actually amounts to him doing anything there, we'll wait and see, but he was excellent in Brisbane. Gael Monfils and Gilles Simon both won titles in the first week of the year as well. Elena Svitolina got the Brisbane women's title, although she had to come from four love down in two successive matches, one against Johanna Konta and then another one in the next round against Karolina Pliskova before beating Alexandra Sasnovich in the final, who I have to say was the story of the tournament for me. Svitolina may have won it, but Sasnovich, she won seven matches just to get to the final, came all the way through qualifying. Heck of a character, really good fun, Alexandra Sasnovich, and a good player too, so keep your eyes open for her. Another player who is doing extremely well at the moment is Julia Görges of Germany. She has won, I think, 14 matches in a row now, dating back to the end of last year, and she's now opened her year with victory over Caroline Wozniacki in the final in Auckland, and really comes into the Australian Open now as somebody we better start taking notice of. Nigel Sears runs us through all the players that we can expect to look out for. And, I mean, the list is as long as your arm. It's incredible just how many people he feels are in with a chance of doing some major damage this year. In Perth, Switzerland won the Hopman Cup. Roger Federer and Belinda Bencic joining forces to lift that trophy. So well done to them. They go off to Australia, off to Melbourne now with some great confidence. Bencic is another player who's on just a fantastic run at the moment. And then that bloke, Federer, well, he always seems to play well, doesn't he, frankly? So, I mean, he's going to be 60, isn't he, entering the Hopman Cup and preparing for Wimbledon in a few years' time. Also, should just add another huge thanks to everybody who's contributed to our Kickstarter campaign. We've got one more week still to go. We've had 430 of you pitching in, taking part, so that we can continue this show going for another year, the weekly show and the daily tennis podcast at the Grand Slam tournaments. That's going to be happening. As I say, one more week still to go. So if you want to be part of that group that helps us along our way, maybe enter the predictions competition, which is still open, you've got another week in which to do so. We'd like to get to 500 backers if we possibly can. So that's another 70 over the next week. And we might just come up with a special extra if you do it. So I'll give you details of that on our social media channels. So keep an eye out on those. Now, Andy Murray, I mentioned him. He's had surgery today in Melbourne. And it came as a bit of a surprise to everybody. He spent some time talking to some of the journalists over in Melbourne, or who are over in Sydney actually at the moment, many of them, but they did a conference call today. The news is that Murray had surgery to his right hip by a surgeon called John McDonnell, somebody I think he's known for many years, dealt with him post-Australian Open on a number of occasions, and obviously has huge respect and admiration for what he's able to do in his field. We're told that the surgery went very well, and the intention is for Andy Murray to be back for the grass court season, starting at the Queen's Club Championships in June, followed hopefully by Wimbledon. That's what he wants to try to do. Who knows whether that will end up coming to fruition, but that's certainly what Andy Murray would like to be able to do. He also told the British reporters who were over there following his progress that he'd had a minor groin surgery just before Christmas. Nothing too significant, that, but another thing to add to the mix. After the surgery, what he said to our colleague Simon Briggs of The Telegraph and the various other assembled media members, there was Russell Fuller from the BBC, Stu Fraser from The Times, Mike Dixon from The Mail, Kevin Mitchell from The Guardian, and Paul Newman from The Independent. Those are the journalists that he spoke to. And Andy Murray said, the reason for having this done was to enable me to get back competing. I'm not finished playing tennis yet. I'm going to be competing at the highest level again. So pretty bullish, this from Andy Murray. He said, I'm very optimistic. The surgeon was very happy with how it went. He felt that my hip will be feeling better than it did a year ago. Obviously, I was doing fine a year ago. I was ranked number one in the world a year ago. I'm not going to be putting in the same amount of tournaments and effort to try to get to number one in the world again, he said. I'll be focusing more on trying to win major events and big tournaments rather than trying to achieve certain ranking goals. He described the process in as much as he said he was nervous this morning, but he knew it was the right decision. He said at Wimbledon everything was hurting, that he'd never had pain like it before. And although it's got better in recent months, it's still extremely tiring mentally when you're feeling your hip from the first minute you wake up in the day and start walking to when you lie down at night. He says, I'm happy that I'm going to be out of that pain now and to get back playing. He says the advice he's been given is 12 to 14 weeks, and that most likely around the grass court season he will be able to get back and playing the sport again. He says, I want to come back when I'm fit and ready to play, not to get into a situation like in Brisbane or in New York where I'm unsure when I turn up at a tournament how fit I'm going to be. Finally, he said, one of the things I would like to do is play until my eldest daughter is able to watch me and have a small understanding of what it is I've done for my living. That would be cool, he said. If she can come along and watch me hit some balls or to practice. I like seeing a lot of the other kids when they're on tour with their parents. And now I've had surgery, that's something I'm looking to in the future. Well, I think we can probably all agree that we wish him the very best of luck with that surgery and the rehabilitation and the recovery that will go with it. My personal view is that it was absolutely the right thing to do to get this done quickly. I think he did the right thing in many ways, rehabbing it. I know a lot of people would say, oh, you know, he could have saved himself a lot of trouble, but maybe he wouldn't have done. Maybe he would have been fine having the rehab. Anybody can say this stuff in hindsight. All I would say is that, you know, he's got to the point where he had no choice. He's had it done. And it's notable reading the accounts of some of the journalists that that have written about it today that were in that conversation with him, how upbeat he was. And now that he's drawn a line and had this surgery done, you can tell that it's given him clarity of mind. He's no longer got that confusion about, am I doing the right thing? Should I rehab it? Should I have surgery? He's taken the plunge. That's a huge decision for him, and I suspect it will give him the best possible chance of recovery, and at least he's now upbeat and positively looking forward. So wish him all the very best. Now, I spoke to Simon Briggs yesterday, as I said, before we actually knew that he'd had the operation, but it was obviously pretty clear that Murray was going to have it. Simon had written a piece about how he thought it would be well worth Murray persevering and trying to return regardless of the level, and I asked Simon to explain what he meant by that.
Well, I mean, let's say to start with that it is a little bit out of his hands. You know, it's either going to be a success, in which case I have no doubt that he will come back to tennis at some level. They're probably not a Grand Slam winning level. Or it's not going to work out and he's probably going to have to finish. So the choice, in a sense, will be made for him. He's made it pretty clear that he wants to come back on any level. That's what he said again in that interview in Brisbane before we arrived. He said, if it's number 30 in the world, I'd take that. I think if it's number 80 in the world, he'd probably take it. But my feeling was that the example particularly of Leighton Hewitt, who played on late in his career and had some fantastic individual appearances at the big events, and who really managed to win over a lot of the skeptics with his kind of courage and his gumption, really, to just keep on training and competing and entertaining people. That's something that Andy could look at. If he's anywhere near able to sustain, you know, a presence on the court for, let's say, a reduced schedule, then that is something that I think he'd want to do, and I think it's something that would be worth doing. You know, the great thing about tennis is that you can look at it from two angles. One, you can say only one person who goes to a tournament ends up winning. Everyone else loses. Or you can say that 64 people in a 128 draw win at some point. And if you've seen someone like Leighton Hewitt or someone like Andy Roddick play under the lights at the US Open or here in Melbourne, you know that a victory against, you know, a very solid player who they've drawn in the first round is no mean achievement and not to be sneezed at, and something that the crowds will appreciate and the viewers at home will love too.
I think that's a very interesting point. And I'd agree with it and go a little further as to say I suspect that he, in recent months, has been in some sort of shock about what's happened, because just a year ago he was the world number one. And yes, it didn't go that well in Australia last year, but there was no suggestion in the months that followed that he was in any way fighting for his career, which it now feels like he probably is. Catherine and I were talking about the difficulty with coming to terms with a situation like that, and I would suspect that if he could make a meaningful comeback and be able to ultimately decide himself and go out on terms that he's comfortable with in 2-3 however many more years it might be, that would be worth doing for him. That, you know, to wring out some more of his career, because at the moment I just think it must just feel, as Richard Krajicek once described retirement to me, as like a black hole. No matter how rich these guys are and how well they've done. I mean, he's done it. You know, when you look at Murray's achievements in the game, I was walking around some corridors at a TV studio the other day and seeing pictures of him on the wall having won the Olympic gold. And you start to think, two Olympic golds, two Wimbledon titles, US Open title, Davis Cup champion, world number one. Yes, there are things that others have done that he hasn't, and he hasn't won the Australian Open, I know how much he wanted to, but that is an incredible CV and record of achievement, isn't it, when you line it all up like that. But at the same time, he is not ready to stop. That in his mind, he's not ready to stop.
And as I say, it came on so fast to go from world number one and And that moment in January 2017, when it looked like Novak and Andy were going to carve up the year between them, to 6 months later, being unable to play, and then no clear road back to the court. And the shock has been clearly something that has scrambled his brain, and who can blame him for that? And, you know, the phrase fear of the unknown has been, you know, mentioned by someone who knows him well, because these guys, they've spent their entire lives on the court since they were knee-high to a grasshopper, and it's just hard to compute the mental challenge of reshaping your expectations. He's clearly put a lot of hope on this comeback in Brisbane for a long time, and the Instagram post, we haven't mentioned that. For me, the most poignant line was the one where he says, every time I go to sleep or have a nap, I hope that I'll wake up and it'll be better. And I mean, that kind of really makes your heart bleed for him, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You mentioned Novak there. Obviously, we had a rash and rush of people withdrawing, big names withdrawing from the Australian Open all at once. Kei Nishikori, then Andy Murray, then for different reasons, Serena Williams. Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic, I understand, are both now in Melbourne. I know you're not in Melbourne yet, but my understanding is that they are there. I've seen pictures of them, and I think Novak today posted a video of himself hitting there. They're going to play the Tiebreak Tens event, the one-nighter next week, and they've also got the Kooyong tournament, I think, which one of them is playing. I think Novak Djokovic is playing, isn't he?
That's right.
What's the feeling? Because, I mean, you know, The thing with Djokovic, we were talking about last week, everything seemed to be going really well in his recovery, and then suddenly he's out of these tournaments with this elbow problem flaring up again. Any feeling yourself out there as to what we're going to end up with those two?
Not especially. I mean, only that the Novak post yesterday did sound extremely confident, didn't it? He even gave a bit of the Idemu. I don't know how you say that.
Idemu.
Serbian pronunciation is not up to much. Post from a guy who obviously had that unexpected setback in the Middle East only a couple of weeks earlier. And Rafa's bustling around the practice court. I've seen videos of him in training. But they're trying to do something that not even Federer did last year. I mean, at least Federer came into Melbourne with the Hotman Cup behind him, didn't he? In Novak's case particularly, not to have played a serious match since Wimbledon last year, even a man of his extraordinary gifts is surely going to struggle to go too deep in the Australian Open, you would have thought. And then for Nadal, I still can't get over that bizarre appearance at the O2 in November, which just seemed against all logic, and you just wonder what's going on in his head after he clearly benefited 12 months ago from the extended off-season that he'd taken, a guy whose body needs to be lined up with from a decent way out to get it ready for the big tournaments, and he's just headed off to London in the full knowledge that his knee wasn't right, and then played a match. Was it Goffin he played?
Yeah.
And it does seem completely bonkers, and you wonder what was the subtext there. I still don't understand. I mean, it sounded like he was maybe so determined to make up for the six previous times he'd withdrawn. Was it five? I think maybe it was six this time. The five previous times that he'd withdrawn from the World Tour Finals, that he just was determined to get on the court, but it looks even more baffling now than it did then.
Yeah, that was a surprising one. The other two British players have had a couple of health scares of their own that are the notable ones out there. Johanna Konta, great performance to get a first set on the board against Svitolina, and then eventually hurt herself and retired midway through the third set. Kyle Edmund managed to get through his match with Dimitrov. Really good performance from him as well. But it was an alarming fall, wasn't it? I mean, he and yet both of them, the kind of murmurs that you're hearing is that they might not be too badly impeded.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Conte's going to play in Sydney probably tomorrow. And Farrell will probably play in Auckland. And I think it was very precautionary in Conte's case if she'd been involved, let's say, in a tournament in October after the end of the Slam season. She probably would have gone on, completed a match, but she just didn't quite know what was going on with the hip, and she's had some physio, some assessment, and I think it'll be okay. And yeah, both of them have played some good tennis if it hadn't been for those interruptions. But yeah, I think it was Stuart who joked that even the fans from Britain in Brisbane should have watched out and tripped on their faces walking out of the venue, because it did seem like it was a bit of a jinx tournament for us.
Yeah, the British journalists will be next, no doubt. But anyway, mentioned Serena Williams being out. Was that your expectation? I mean, I think it increasingly became apparent that even though she'd played that one-nighter in, or that one match in Abu Dhabi, that she'd flown back to Florida and that it wasn't going to happen, and that she needed more time.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned a couple of times in the paper the comparison with Clijsters in 2009. Speaking to John Dolan, who worked with Clijsters before we went to work for the Lawn Tennis Association, he said that she'd done 9 months of pretty solid gym training, and I just think 4 months was always pushing it. I think Simon Cambers, the reporter for Reuters and other places, has spoken to Mouratoglou since, the coach, and he says that there were some complications in the birth as well, which probably set her back. And if you're Serena, do you want to go back unless you're feeling really confident? I mean, for one thing, do you want to risk a meeting with Maria Sharapova and a smudge on your wonderful head-to-head record with her? if you're coming back at all undercooked, it's always a risk.
Yeah, it's about, what is it, about 14 years since you lost to Maria Sharapova.
Yeah, I don't think she wants to give Maria a sort of an unexpected chance to wallop her at half fitness.
No. Just a word quickly on Nick Kyrgios. Today he won his first title in Australia. I know you weren't in Brisbane for that, but
I watched it quite closely.
what, I mean, you and I talk about him a lot. I mean, we're both... Mm. I think we're all fascinated by him, aren't we? He's just such an interesting character, and the potential is so limitless. And now, with the absences, I mean, if you think there's really only Murray that's got that unblemished record against him, he's beaten everybody else. He knows he can beat everybody else, and yet there's still a huge question mark over whether he's actually capable or going to be able to deliver over the best of five at a slam. I mean, do you feel that this is a step that he has not taken before that is meaningful going into this tournament?
Not really, no, because of the strapping he had around his knee and the clear concern that it was creating for him. The question is always, can his body hold up for a fortnight? And it doesn't look to me like he's in ideal physical shape. I think he was actually a little bit sore, even though he was playing wonderful tennis. I mean, it was a joy to watch. And it was, at times, it was totally irresistible. It was Federer-esque in the sense that he used the sabre. Not that you can call it a saber, I suppose, if it's a sneak attack by Nick. It doesn't quite scan as an acronym. But he was doing... he's sort of using drop shots and mixing up his game and just completely keeping his opponents off balance. In the game against Harrison and then the match against Dimitrov, it was absolutely compelling. So great stuff to watch, but the same question totally hasn't been answered about whether he's robust enough to come through 7 5-set matches, and I'd be shocked if he'd managed that in Melbourne.
Yeah, it's still a big question mark, isn't it? And the one other question I asked in a pole vault on at Tennis Podcast is whether he would be having a better career right now, in people's opinions, with a coach in tow. I mean, obviously, it depends who the coach is to some degree. But do you feel that he is just somebody that may well end up going his whole career without a kind of recognisable coach. I mean, he's working, I think, with Todd Reed. He's got, obviously, Leighton Hewitt pretty close by as well. What's your view?
I think it's Matt Reed, is it?
Matt Reed, that's correct, yeah.
The Australian doubles player. I mean, I think Matt Reed is sort of his companion and support network and probably is a coach, really. That's what he sort of half called him jokingly on the court after he won the title. But at the same time, it's almost more important that he has a conditioning expert that he believes in, because God knows he can play every shot. I mean, there's one point yesterday when he didn't move his feet at all to a Harrison serve and belted it back for a forehand winner at over 100 miles an hour, I think it was, with a sort of expression on his face like, I'm almost bored of how good I am. And it was just ridiculous. He was being too cool for school as usual, but at the same time, he hit a winner and he was just lording it over Harrison, who's had a little bit of a niggle with in the past. So he was kind of showing off the full bag of tricks, and it is quite mind-blowing what he can do with a tennis racket. So it's more just that question of conditioning, and he still doesn't seem to be in that place where you would back him to go long enough. That's why I think that the fitness trainer, the physio, those kind of people are almost more important to him.
Yeah. So what will the next week hold for you, Simon? Will you stay in Sydney for a few days? Will you go to Melbourne at a point that you already know about? What are your plans?
Well, I think I want to be in Melbourne definitely for Wednesday night with the tiebreak tens with Rafa Nadal and Novak Djokovic. Possibly on Tuesday as well for, I think Novak's going to play at Kooyong. And today is off to the cricket. So
off to the cricket?
Yeah, a little bit of variety. Nice.
That sounds lovely. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And we've also twisted your arm to take part in the Tennis Podcast Predictions Challenge this year, Simon. You're a late entrant, I'm delighted to say. How much are you looking forward to that?
You know my record on these things is less than impressive.
Of all the people that I've spoken to, including Rosie the dog, you were the least enthusiastic. There's no question about it. But you've got to do it now, so that's good.
Okay.
Excellent. Well, Simon, lovely to talk to you, as always, on the show. We'll be having you on, I hope, over the course of the fortnight. Travel well, enjoy your cricket today, and we'll speak to you soon.
All right, thanks a lot.
So there's Simon Briggs, who is telling me that Sydney was well over 40 degrees Celsius yesterday, which, frankly, is a bit too hot for my pasty white skin. But anyway, I'll try not to complain too much, because it's probably irritating the heck out of you. It would be.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Anyway, I also spoke, as I mentioned at the start of the show, to Nigel Sears, who is the father-in-law of Andy Murray. Nigel had counted an astonishing 26 names that he felt could be competing for big titles this year.
Well, if you thought last year was an open year, you wait for this one, because I was looking at it ahead of speaking to you now, and I think we have to consider 26 players that could make an impression this year. I look at 13 of those, almost dead ringers to have a great year, and I can go through them with you in a minute, but 13 others are very possibly going to have a great year. So in many ways, that firstly, you know, proves that we're going to have a very exciting time on the tour. And secondly, it's just so wide open. I mean, anything could happen again.
Those names, if we go through, I mean, we were talking beforehand. I think you view them as in groups, don't you? And there are some certainties that you think are going to be part of the conversation. Are they pretty much the ones from last year?
Well, I mean, I think we can divide it in terms of game style. To a degree. I mean, you've got your counterpunchers. Now, that's not to undermine when I refer to them as counterpunchers, that these are defensive players. They're not at all. But in terms of their physical stature and the way they play the game, they're wonderful movers. They read the game superbly well, and they're great tacticians. And those players I'm talking about are players like Wozniacki, Halep, Svitolina, Kerber, who I think we'll see an awful lot stronger than last year.
What's that?
I just feel that she's so much better as a player than she was the player that we saw last year. She was playing with a burden on her shoulders. She was hackled by the responsibility that she felt internally that she had to kind of reproduce the year that she had the year before. It was virtually impossible to reproduce that straight off the bat. And, I mean, it's a phenomenal year she'd had. And I think we saw a shadow of her real self, and I expect her to be an awful lot stronger. Sevastova, I mean, she's now emerging at the top end of the field, and she's definitely a very crafty, very talented counterpuncher.
Sevastova, that's an interesting one, because she won her first two matches in Brisbane, barely losing games. And you actually think she could be part of the conversation at the very top end?
Oh, she's been shooting up the rankings for a while, but I mean, she's a very gifted player, and she's starting to package her game an awful lot better. Our own Jo Konter, I mean, I know she wobbled at the back end of last year, but she's got off to a good start this year already, comes through two tough matches, two three-set matches in which she's been tested. And I think that she's come through.
How big a deal is that, do you think, to her? Because it was pretty alarming, wasn't it, the way she fell away late last year, yet she was so good earlier in the year.
I don't think we can underestimate how important this start has been for Joe. A lot of people will say, well, it's just the first tournament. It's not the case at all. She was in free fall at the end of last year, having had a great year for most of the time. And she desperately needed to reassert herself at the top end of the tour. And I think she's already had a good start to the season.
New coach, incidentally, Michael Joyce. What do you know about him?
Michael's got an awful lot of experience. He, of course, worked previously with Maria Sharapova. He was a good player himself. He knows the game inside out. He's quite a steely character. I mean, I think he'll get involved perhaps a little more in terms of real coaching on the court when he goes on. I don't think he'll always look to positively reinforced. I think he's capable of using constructive criticism in a very good way that I think Joe needs at times.
Well, are there obvious things, do you feel, that would take Konter from where she is now to a higher level?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, despite the quality of her serve, her backhand, particularly the cross-court backhand, and she go down the line too, but the forehand is a much improved shot, but at times it does wobble. We've seen it earlier this week too. She's ballooned a few out the back. And at times she just needs that little bit of tweaking, technical tweaking, just minor things, just staying down a bit longer, attacking, using the racket head speed, keeping the swing nice and simple. She just needs that little bit of extra push on things. And I think he can deliver that as well as giving her the positive reinforcement and encouragement that she craves.
So she's a good news story in terms of her start. What about some of the other players? I mean, you mentioned some of the counterpunchers. There's some big hitters out there too,
well,
aren't there?
Well, interesting enough, I think Jo straddles those two groups because she's capable of hitting a big ball, but she's also capable of trading very aggressively and very steadily. So Jo Konter, I'd say, kind of does a bit of both, and that's interesting the way she plays. But in terms of the strikers, well, how can you count out a Serena Williams who is dealing with a newborn baby? And if she can manage that and put everything together, you can never count her out. And I did watch the exhibition that she played in Abu Dhabi very recently against Ostapenko, and I thought she was timing the ball beautifully then, considering she hasn't played at all. I mean, no surprise, really. I mean, you can never count her out, and if she has the will and the capability to organise her life around the baby and still have the same desires and everything else, then, I mean, she's certainly going to be one to be reckoned with. Maria Sharapova, she's back. Like it or not, she's back, and we got to factor her in the equation.
How big a factor do you think she can be this year?
I don't think she's a threat to Serena at Serena's best, put it that way. I'm not sure she's going to beat Muguruza at her best either, or Pliskova at her best. And those are two other players that are in the striking category, and I'm expecting big things from again this year. You've got Coco Vandeweghe coming along, who is improving all the time, working with Pat Cash. I think that's a great fit. And she has a heavyweight game, and I think I'd expect to see her have a pretty good year. And then, of course, let's not forget Caroline Garcia. I mean, she was magnificent at the end of last year, and she's so gifted. Wonderful physique. She's a player that seems to have it all, and it was really coming to fruition nicely at the back end of last year. Disappointing this week to see her pull out with a lower back injury. I hope that's not too serious. Started the third set, and she pulled out. Mm. But hopefully she's just being a little cautious ahead of the Australian Open. So those really, the players that I've mentioned so far, I'm sort of writing down and saying they're bankers for a good year, all being given health and fitness. Venus Williams, well, she's going to be 38 this year. And, I mean, you can't count her out either, so you've got to put her in consideration. And I think we've got equally 13 players that you've got to consider. She's certainly one of them. What about Agnieszka Radwańska? I see her having a better year than last year, but can I see her getting back to the top five in the world where she spent most of her time in her career? I'm not sure about that.
Well, it's not room for everybody, is there? Because there's so many you're mentioning here. Yeah.
And I think we might have seen the best of her. Sadly, she's one of my favourite players. I love the way she plays. And she's had a wonderful career already. I'm not writing her off, and I expect to see her do better, but I'm just not sure whether she's going to make top five again. Dominika Szybulkova, well, she went off the boil a little bit, had some injury problems, but you can't write her off. I mean, she could well come back with vengeance this year. We're looking at what's going to happen with Azarenka. Is she going to be able to play? We don't know, but she's bound to make an impression if she does. Sloane Stephens, magnificent form in the summer, won the US Open, her first slam, but then didn't win another match, I don't think, for the rest of the year. So it's just, I don't know what happened there, but we've seen that before from Sloane when she made the semifinals of the Australian Open. Found it difficult to deal with that success. Fell off a cliff almost after that. Well, let's hope that doesn't happen to her. Let's hope she can play well. So you're factoring her in. The finalists there, Madison Keys, massive game. I mean, she is just a wonderful ball striker, and you have to say she's in the mix. I've got a couple of question marks. Mladenovic, Pavlyuchenkova, Gerges. What about Bencic? She's coming back from a back injury. You've got to put her in the equation.
I've got a headache.
She's won a couple of $125,000 tournaments back end of last year. And what a player she is. What a talent she is. And then let's not forget the young guns. You've got Ashleigh Barty. You've got Yelena Ostapenko. You've got Daria Kazatkina. I mean, three great players who've actually had a dreadful start to this year. They all lost first round this week. So those three youngsters, but they are going to factor. So we have so much to look forward to, and it says something about the depth in the women's game.
So who's going to win the Australian Open then?
Don't ask me.
It's not easy, is it? On the men's side, it feels almost for the first year that there's a similar feel in terms of the unknown, because the players that have been dominating, yes, Roger Federer seems to be fit, but I mean, let's be honest, he's in his late 30s now. There's a lot of ill health out there, and there's a lot of unknowns.
Well, there is, and it's these wonderful players that we've seen for a long time leading the men's game. are all struggling with fitness. I mean, it's so sad to see Andy at the moment struggling with his hip when he just wants to play so badly. Yeah? He's got this burning desire to get back. He's doing everything he possibly can, but
it's tough, isn't it?
It's just been hard, and I feel for him. And of course, Rafa's got his knee issues, and you've got Novak with his elbow. And then there's Roger Federer, as fit as a fiddle, moving better than ever. I couldn't believe how well he was moving at the O2 when I watched him. And it's just wonderful to see.
So opportunities for other players, people like Dimitrov and Zverev, of course, we'll look forward to all that. I've been following as much as the tennis over the last month, Nigel. I've been following the exploits of your son, Scott Sears, who the Antarctic Gurkha is what he billed himself as. I mean, he was raising money for the Gurkhas, and he became the youngest man ever to reach the South Pole solo, unassisted and unsupported. I mean, having read his blog, it was a staggering thing to follow the progress of him. He reached the South Pole on Christmas Day, 12 days ahead of schedule, I believe. But what was it like to be his dad from afar while that was going on?
Well, hats off to Scotty. But I mean, I think when your son comes to you and says, "Dad, I'm going to trek to the South Pole," in the sort of conditions that he was going to face, I mean, it was very hard to embrace it immediately. I mean, it scared the life out of us. It really did. But now I've sort of watched it unfold, and he's safely back home, and he's achieved what he wanted to achieve. I'm just in awe of what he's done, and nothing but admiration for him. And I think it's been a fabulous cause and just an incredible experience.
Has he always been like that, wanting to do stuff like that?
An absolute lunatic. Yeah, but I mean, he certainly went one stage further this time. I really wasn't sure about it, and I'm just very glad that he's come back in one piece.
Yeah, great to have him back in one piece, and a fantastic tennis season to look forward to. Nigel, lovely to talk to you. So there's Nigel Sears. I should also mention that he also thought of a 27th and maybe even a 28th, in as much as he feels Petra Kvitova can be a huge factor over the next year, and also maybe Svetlana Kuznetsova, who's reached the WTA finals a couple of years ago and got to the semis. So he did want to stress that he hadn't missed them out deliberately, just forgotten them. I mean, it's hardly surprising with that many players, is it? So that brings this particular tennis podcast to a close. Catherine sends her apologies. She would love to have been here, but she couldn't on this occasion. We thank you for your support and also for listening, of course, to the tennis podcast. We are brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with Eurosport, by Triple S, our Kickstarter executive producer, and Melanie Bowes, who's also an executive producer and our champion of the Tennis Podcast Predictions Challenge. And, of course, a shout-out to Charlie the Ferret, our official mascot. We will be back very soon from the Australian Open in Melbourne. We will be there after the draw, bringing you our preview. Can't wait. Speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.